Court.
Chief Justice Boyer, judges and justices of the Ohio Supreme Court. My name is Frank Boger. I represent the appellants. And it's our privilege today to bring to you a set of facts which we believe requires the application of Article 8, Section 6 of the Ohio Constitution. In this case, the city has loaned and also gifted to a private developer monies from public funds for the development of a subdivision across from the Trumbull County Country Club of the city of Warren. The subdivision has 32 lots and consists of a dead-end street with two cul-de-sacs, 2,200 feet long. The city has entered into contract with Crossbar Realty and also Silver Lands North corporations, private corporations, for construction of streets, sanitary sewers, storm sewers, curbing, and water. The city is going to pick up 20% of the cost of the construction. The other 80% will be paid, is to be paid by the developer, that's just the construction cost. And that construction cost would be paid at the time that the developer sells the lots on a pro rata basis.
Mr. Boger, we've read the briefs and we understand the 80-20. It doesn't seem to me you're complaining about the 80-20. You're complaining about the fact that the city financed the package and then the 80% was going to be paid off over a period of time as people used or tapped in the facilities.
Correct.
Isn't that a routine way that city councils, as a city councilman, I did that day in and day out. For instance, when you're going to extend a water line out into a neighborhood where there are still farms, it's a very expensive proposition. And if those people didn't tap into it, they didn't pay until they did. Sanitary sewers, we have a whole list of cases that say you put sanitary sewers in, you sell the bonds, you issue the notes, sell the bonds, and then when the tap-ins come, it's paid back. What's wrong with that?
Justice Douglas, I would think and I was hoping that perhaps when you were on council that the abutting property owners would be assessed a pro rata share of that cost. In this case, there isn't any assessment. There's no way to back up that assessment. If it were assessed, it would be put on the tax duplicate, and the adjoining property owners, it would be like a lien on that real estate to assure the payment of that money.
Well, you either pay or you don't get tapped in.
Well, in this case, they're going to tap him in irregardless of whether they pay or whether they don't pay for the 80%. And so we don't know when it comes time. In other words, there's a balloon payment that comes up. In other words, as he sells the lots, he pays the pro rata share, and in 15 years pays the balloon payment. How do we know that that contractor is going to be solvent? In both cases, contractors try to provide for asset protection, so they do not have a lot of funds in a corporation. So we don't know whether that corporation is going to be solvent. We don't know whether they're going to go through bankruptcy. And if that's the case, then the city will wind up bearing that cost, that is the taxpayers. And we maintain that this is the very crux of why Article 8, Section 6 was passed, when they were pumping money into the old canals, into the old railroads, and the citizenry finally rebuked this and said, we have to do something about this, and we're going to insist on Article 8, Section 6.
Was your main complaint the fact that the loan was not secured?
That is one of the main complaints, but the other complaint is...
And would they have the right to assess a lien on all the property owners if the developer didn't pay the loan? Could they convert that into a lien on all the properties?
The contract is between the contractor and the city. So if the contractor sells the lots to the private property owners, there is no lien on that property. So therefore, we're depending upon the solvency of the contractor without collateral, without a bond, without any collateral whatsoever or any assessment. Now, if they had gone through the assessment procedure, even then we maintain that is this not a gift under Article 8, Section 6, the 20%? And are we not loaning the credit of the city for the 80%? In other words, we're saying that they're going to, because it first started out, what they were going to do is they were going to float bonds, and this was going to, they were going to tax the entire property of all of the citizens of the city of Warren to pay for this development. The trial court, that part of it said it was unconstitutional. You can't do that. If you go back to the drawing board, and you do it another way, it's okay because it represents industry and commerce. We seriously question whether this represents industry and commerce. Let's change the facts just slightly, as an instance. Let's say city council says, you know, the mayor's brother is a contractor, and what we're going to do is we're going to pay for the materials, we're going to pay for the labor, and we're going to let the developer reap the profit, and we are going to pay for it, the city, because we think that this induces industry and commerce. We say this is a long way off what we believe that was intended by Article 8, Section 13 of the Ohio Constitution.
But that is our facts.
That the farm development and the assessed or taxed for
if you go under Chapter 727, the procedure is an assessment procedure, and there's three ways that they can do that. They can assess it by the front foot, they can assess it on based on the tax valuation, or they can assess it based on the fair market value of the property.
Is that the only way you can put sewer and water in your community?
Well, it may or may not be. In other words, if we are extending the lines to an industry to help a business where the activity continues, like in Zupansky.
Let me ask you this. Isn't it possible for a community, a local community, to decide and say they didn't have any sewer or water at all, to put it in and to pay for it based on user fees?
I think
they'll finance the whole thing that way. I mean, if the economics work, they're not required to assess anybody anything.
Well, aren't they? Well, it depends. Yes and no. In other words, if we are doing this for an industry, for commerce, to promote industry and commerce, I would say yes. If we are doing it to promote a private developer and we're paying for his extension of his sewers, an extension of his water, I'd say no.
Let me back you up.
Yes, sir.
We all live someplace.
Yes, sir.
Many of us live in cities.
Yes, sir.
Served by sewer, served by water. That got put in a variety of different ways, financed in a variety of different ways. For a lot of people, those benefits were put in with no assessment of any kind. Isn't that true? And the only payment they make is their share of whatever the monthly fees are.
Yeah. Your Honor, in most cases, I've found that the developer goes in, puts in the streets, puts in the sandwich.
You want to talk about it yourself, but I'm... And you're saying it's unfair and it's an unfair benefit to the developer. It's unfair by your standards, but in many communities, probably 68% of homes, businesses, industries are served by sewer and water.
Yes.
That nobody is successful to.
I don't question their right to put in sewer and water. I don't question. The question is, who should pay for it? Should the public be taxed for this, or should the individual developer? In most cases, the individual developer puts in all of these utilities and then goes back and charges it in as part of the cost of the lots. In this case, the city is paying for it, and he's still going to get the profit on the lot.
Yeah, and usually you make the developer put up a bond or the cash in escrow before the improvements go in.
Exactly.
I concede that.
Exactly.
Your proposition of law interests me when you say that it's going to be paid off on a per lot basis at the time of the sale of the lots. Don't say anything about a balloon payment, but in your discussion you said there's a balloon payment.
Well, when I said balloon payment, I call it after 15 years, the contract provides that if all the lots have been sold, he has to pay up the remainder.
Okay.
So we don't know whether the lots are going to be sold. We don't know whether they're not going to be sold.
But that's not really the definition of a balloon payment, is it? Balloon payment
I used an improper definition of your honor, but after 15 years, that's what
the, yeah, I understand now.
Required.
And if those lots are remaining unsold, if he owes X per lot, can't the city convert the judgment to the loan payment to a judgment and file the city on his property within the state?
Well, they could reduce it possibly to a judgment, yes, and try to go against the law. They could. Well, it all depends what the values of the lots will be at that time. We hope so. We hope so. We hope so. The other thing about it is that if we don't draw a line somewhere, we will aggregate Article 8, Section 6, and I guess it's a question of where do we draw the line. Now, in Sapansing, this court carved out an exception. It carved out the exception saying that, you know, here what we're doing is trading rent for services, and so therefore, this is a continuing activity, and therefore, we will justify it because it's low and moderate income housing. However, in this case, it isn't a continuing activity of services and an exchange of rent. Once the lots are sold, the activity is over. What happens in the next case when they do more for the developer and more for the developer at the taxpayer's expense? And we say that somehow there has to be a line drawn. And we think an overstep here because we don't see the relationship with business and commerce in this case. We say this is removed from that. It'd be different if this were an industry, if it were a corporation, and we were trying to bring people in here into our city to try to broaden its base.
Do you think the construction industry would be interested in knowing that you don't think that they're an industry of commerce?
I'm concerned, sir.
Do you think the construction industry would be interested in knowing that you don't think they're an industry of commerce? Home building.
But how does it benefit the community as a whole? In other words, who benefits by that dead-end street? It's not a main thoroughfare. It's only the people who live there on the street, Judge Stratton.
Well, the only people that benefit from a mall are the people that go to the mall. You can make that argument for anybody. The only people that benefit from a parking lot from the office building are the people that go to the mall.
Well, the people that go to the mall is the general public. The people who go to the subdivision are mostly the people who live there.
And the general public has a right to buy houses.
Well, yeah, I guess you could look at it that way. You could look at it that way, yes. Yes, sir. I'd like to reserve some of the time for later.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Porter. Mr. Doherty.
Court, Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court, my name is Dave Doherty, and it's my pleasure to see you here today. Before you, on behalf of the city court, just preliminarily, to understand why the city council decided to do this project, the city of Warren is kind of, I guess you'd say, a little economically depressed. There hasn't been a whole lot of development in the city for a number of years. Back sometime prior to 1996, the developer from Canton approaches the city council and the mayor about developing this 100-acre tract of property that remained largely undeveloped.
But, Councilor, this isn't a city project. This is a private development. It's a private development.
It's a private development owned by a private
developer. The profits that's going to be made is going to be made by a private developer.
Right.
And the city is going to finance it.
No.
They're going to finance it.
Financing the construction of
up front.
Streets and roads, which are city-owned property. There's no commingling of private and public.
Now, you're really not standing there and telling me in every subdivision that it is entered into in the city of Warren that the city provides the streets and sewers at no cost to a developer?
Well, Your Honor, this is the...
You know that's not so.
This is the first development that the city that has since last since 1981. And I would say in areas that are economically burgeoning, they're going to do it that way. But I think the council has that option, or the discretion to say, we need some development in this city, and then here's how we're going to fund it.
What does that clear language of Section 6 mean? The Chief Justice descended into panic, and in effect he warned us this is the kind of thing that's going to happen. And it was a housing development in Zupanic, exactly what we have here. And this is the next step. Where would it stop? What would Section 6 mean?
We're actually making loans for the developer to construct the homes, and then we're going to rent those homes out.
Developer can't construct homes here without roads, without water, without sewers.
That's correct.
The zoning wouldn't let that happen.
That's correct.
So how's it different?
The fact is that, you know, in both the appellants and in the lower court, it was characterized as being a private road. It's not a private road. Once that plat is filed for record, it becomes city-owned property. There's never any funds expended on behalf of a private developer. The contracts were all for construction of the roads and sewers were all entered into on behalf of the city, not on behalf of the private developer. Certainly, he's going to get a benefit, as you would in any case if the city builds a parking deck downtown. Downtown merchants can benefit by their extra parking. The city pays Market Street downtown. The merchants can benefit because they have better traffic in their area. So.
The Court of Appeals did this on Section 13. They, in my judgment, I should tell you up front, they stretched to get there. How can you fit this into a 13 exception?
You really can't, and I think...
You can't, is that right?
No.
And that's what they did, though, didn't they? Otherwise, they said that it was violative of Section 6.
Right, and I think the Court of Appeals actually went too far to say this is a Section 13 case when they should have said there is no lending of aid and credit on behalf of the municipality because it's a city-owned property. You look back at, as far as the late 1800s when municipalities were funding railroads. Walker case, I believe, they approved, and the distinction there was that the railroad was owned solely by the municipality.
In your research for this case, did you go back historically and know what that was all about? The only reason I did it, I had to do it when I was writing another case. And the whole purpose of that was because legislators were taking care of their friends' bridges in their neighborhoods. And so they'd go down to their legislative session, womp up some money for their buddy, and they'd build a bridge.
Right. Well, and I think that was
and they even made a toll bridge out of one of them.
The canal case.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I can drive down Country Club Drive, but there's no private gate. I don't have, you know, in fact, I drove down here today. It's accessible, and in fact, there's bypass built there. It's a fine looking development. It's not. Again, the road and the appurtenances are all owned by the city of Warren. There's no money given to a private developer to construct the roads.
I'd like to bring it up to today. What if we reversed this case? What would happen? Where would it leave the city of Warren?
I think that's the problem I have. I kind of question, why are you here today? Because in actuality...
Well, you are because there's an allegation that you violated the Constitution. Nothing serious, of course.
Well, the fact is that the roads were built. The lower courts did not say we couldn't build a road. The lower court said you can't use general obligation bonds to fund the construction,
sure.
Which we didn't do. There was no bonds ever issued. The city, after Judge McKay and the trial court said you can't issue general obligation bonds, we took a different path to pay for it internally. Mm-hmm. So that became moot. There's never an injunction issued in the trial court or in the lower court. So. City proceeded with the project. The roads are built. 10 lots have been sold. At least five houses are either built or under construction and developed.
All right. So what's the answer to my question? How do we, obviously we can't unring the rung bell, but at this point, if the city can afford to pay for it out of its general fund, which is what they did, to eliminate the objection of the bonds, I mean, it was just a different way of financing, it still comes out of city revenue. So they've paid it, so what they can do is enter into an agreement with the developer, said the court says this was wrong, and you got to pay. What's wrong with that?
Well, and then the...
And then the developer adds it to each lot the way they do in every other subdivision I know about.
The worst case scenario is if this court says the reimbursement agreement is invalid, therefore we can't recoup the money from the developer, so the city pays for the road itself, which they could have done. I mean, that's, I think, discretion of the city council. We're going to take, prior to this development, there was lots laid out. The city could come in and say, we're going to develop open Seminole Avenue, which is basically where this road exists today. And, then it would be discretion of the city council to say, we're going to assess the benefit of property owners. But it doesn't suggest, either constitutionally or statutorily, that so that's the only way the city can pay for the opening of that road.
But if they allocated the money to this project, they would be taking it away from other paving projects and other areas within the city.
That's true, but I think
sure.
That's the legislative prerogative.
Yeah, well, legislators don't do that, I can assure you.
Yeah, I think, in effect, we're asking it almost...
going back to what you just got through saying, that the city could have done this on their own, you don't see any violation of Article 8, Section 6 in doing that?
No.
Explain that. Why don't you see it?
Because, again, it's city-owned property. The streets and the sewers and the water lines are all owned by the city. Again, there was no money ever given to or paid on behalf of
the property. You said the property was owned by the city?
That's correct. Because under 7-Eleven, once the plan is filed for record, that street becomes city property. And when there was no funds ever expended, and then the certificate of availability of funds was issued the day or the day after the plan was actually filed for record. So there's never any money given to a private developer to build or construct the roads and sewers.
But the developer owned the property.
Up until the recordation of the plan, although I guess the old plan had to be vacated, and that was part of the problem in the case. And I think part of the problem in the whole case is this was convoluted facts. And I think we, in the lower courts, primarily viewed this as a zoning case, and that was where our principal function was, or focus was. And I think we always kind of assumed or took it for granted that cities could build roads. Our focus was there, but as we got to this level, I think we realized that there's a danger of making bad law if we say that cities cannot issue general obligation bonds to construct streets and roads and water lines and sewers. And again, I think in effect, we're almost asking this court to issue what would be a wider opinion to say that you can do that. This is not a lending aid credit case. This is really, in effect, a home rule case, saying that this is what one of the functions, and historically has been, that the function of the city is to build and construct roads and sewers and other related purposes.
Thank you, Mr. Gordy. Mr. Boder, you saved about a minute and a half of your time.
It's important to note that in response to your question, we maintain that it really doesn't make any difference whether they pay the contractor for the 20% and give it directly to the contractor, or they give it to the developer who gives it to the contractor. It's the same thing as spending of public monies. I would like to add another thing.
Fundamentally, you're spending public money for public property.
Well, public property, what value is a city, a dead-end city street with two cul-de-sacs to the public? They have to take care of the snow removal.
Well, now that's a separate question. We don't, I guess you're, that would be, cities don't really need that property we call streets.
But see, the Court of Appeals, lower Court of Appeals, gave the quid pro quo argument that this was not a gift. We got something in return. What they got is a liability. They got a liability.
You don't, but that's all you're suggesting here, not a big a principle of law. You're suggesting that that street wasn't a good investment for your city.
No, I'm saying they didn't get something quid pro quo. They got a liability. And also, the city has to pick up 100% of the cost of preparation and advertisement of bids, 100% of the preparation and awarding of contracts, 100% of the cost of the acquisition of requisite government approval, and 100% of the legal costs, and we don't even know what those will amount to. So,
they own 100% of the street's property.
I'm sorry?
Because they own 100% of the street's property.
Well, they own 100%, but is it for the public welfare?
Council, was here opposing council director and said Warren hasn't had a new lot subdivision since 1981.
That's right, and those subdivisions that were created, those streets were paid for by the developer.
Doesn't that suggest to you that those interested in making the community attractive to new industry, new investment, might think that having a new place where people live?
Your Honor, I agree.
Be one of those.
I agree with what you say. But if we do that and push it to the limit, we abrogate Article 8, Section 6, and we're here to interpret what was meant by the people of this state.
Wouldn't the city then have an interest in having some new streets?
Sure they would have an interest. They would have an interest in buying all the corporations in the city. But that doesn't necessarily make it proper under the Constitution. That's what we're saying, Justice White. We're saying that there are limitations to the home rule power under Article 8, Section 6 that cross the line. And if this court does not reverse this case, it will go too far to the point that everything will be industry and commerce, and the city can do anything they want, and Article 8, Section 6 will go down in flames, and we will repeat history.
Thank you, Mr. Boder.
Thank you.
Case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. We'll take a brief recess.
All right.
Seven minutes for about the council.
We are not here this morning to argue the legality of impact fees in general, because all of the parties to this litigation and both of the courts below that have considered the question have concluded that impact fees are something that Ohio municipalities can lawfully promulgate. Rather, we are here this morning to contest the improper invasion of the authority of two different governmental bodies. First, the decision of the Court of Appeals improperly invaded the proper scope of legislative authority of the Beaver Creek City Council. And second, the decision of the Court of Appeals improperly invaded the scope of the trial court's proper authority. The impact fee adopted by the City of Beaver Creek, and which is at issue in this litigation, was entitled to a strong presumption of validity under the rule of Hudson versus Albright, and must be upheld if the validity of the ordinance is even fairly debatable. Under the decision of this court in Willock versus Village of Beechwood, courts are without power to interfere with municipal legislative decisions regarding land use and traffic unless the power of the municipality has been exercised in an arbitrary, confiscatory, and unreasonable manner. Or as stated in State X Rel Gordon v. Rhodes, legislative determination regarding improvements and expenditures will not be rejected or reversed by the court unless manifestly arbitrary or unreasonable. Despite these rules, which have been often repeated and expanded upon by this court and followed carefully by the trial court in this case, the Court of Appeals utterly failed to show any deference to the legislative judgments of the City of Beaver Creek, overruling the decisions of the legislative branch of Beaver Creek on such issues as whether sidewalks are a necessary component of a modern road system, whether storm sewers contribute to the effectiveness of a roadway, and when is it appropriate for a city to contribute its share of the costs of construction, predetermined share of the costs of construction, for a long-range public highway improvement program. This last point was the precise issue on which the Court of Appeals initially overruled the validity of Beaver Creek's impact fee ordinance, apparently convinced that since no schedule had been adopted in the legislation for Beaver Creek to make its contributions to the highway construction program to be partially financed by impact fees, that there was no proof that Beaver Creek would ever make its contribution.
Yeah, well, yeah, no schedule, but more importantly, nothing in any written document that obligates Beaver Creek to pay anything. Isn't that right?
Your Honor, we believe there are at least three different ways in which the ordinance and the documents incorporated by reference in the ordinance specifically obligated the City of Beaver Creek to make its contribution in a predetermined amount. First, let me just review quickly what the capital program here involved. It involves constructing a number of highway improvements over an unknown period of years to be triggered by development as it occurs in the City of Beaver Creek's impact fee district.
I know you're going to go through the three exceptions that are in that ordinance, and I understand that, and I'll give you a chance to do it in a second. I just want to know, do you accept, and I was surprised to see, it seems to me you do accept that the city has to contribute to this.
No question that we accept that, Charlie.
Why?
Because the city calculated on the basis of the best engineering advice that it could procure.
Yes.
The percentage of the traffic that would be generated by new development, as opposed to the percentage that would be generated by all development, whether or not in the Beaver Creek impact fee district.
I understand that, but that's true of every street in every subdivision.
Yes.
And normally the developer pays for the, not through use fees, of course, but through the construction costs. I guess my concern is, because we always did it too, and I wonder if you do it, do you say in large developments that also the developer has to set aside 5 acres for a park?
Your Honor, in Beaver Creek, before the passage of this ordinance, it was the custom, as it is in many municipalities, to work out ad hoc arrangements with developers.
Sure.
To pay for the construction or portions of the construction of specific improvements. The reason for adopting this ordinance was to cease that ad hoc practice and try and adopt a system that would be fairer to the residents, to the developers, and that would be more efficient in constructing improvements that in some cases are going to be quite extensive and expensive.
Okay.
In particular, there's a bridge that needs to be widened.
Okay, let's just stay with this point, and then you can get to yours and the Chief Justice's point about because I think it's important. What law is there that says that you have to, city has to contribute a percentage to the use fee?
Your Honor, we interpret this court's holding in the town properties case.
It comes from this court's decision, doesn't it?
Yes, indeed.
So it's judicially created.
Well,
I mean, there's no statute that I know about that says that, is there?
There is no statute that...
Nothing in the Constitution that requires it.
Well, except insofar as this court's ruling incorporates the Constitution.
Okay.
Beaver Creek intended to be fair to all of the parties here, and in particular, intended to avoid the situation where one developer would be saddled with extraordinary costs to build, say, a $2.2 million bridge widening project, when that development may not be responsible for the entire demand increase that needs the bridge to be widened. So the program was established to try and estimate what the Beaver Creek would look like when it was fully developed, how much of a road system it would need to handle that traffic,